The voice of Husker Nation is on the air. This is Hail Varsity Radio. Insight, opinion, expertise, along with the biggest names talking Nebraska sports. Join in with the show at 402-489-1240 or 1-800-825-5865. Now, here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and Elijah Herbel.
Thanks for hanging out. Welcome into a Tuesday. It's Hail Varsity. We're powered by Cornhead Lager. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel. Get the starting five shout-out is in just a moment. And busy lineup for you. We'll check in with Mitch Sherman from The Athletic in about 15 minutes. Talk to Mitch about some big red topics as the season can't get here enough. Baseball on our mind tomorrow night at Haymarket. Midweek opportunity to make history again with Jackson Brockett on the hill. We'll see. David Gustafson, part of the Nebraska baseball broadcast, with us in hour two. And then an extended sit-down with Matt Schick from ESPN, SiriusXM, and the Schick and Nick podcast. Numbers to get in if you want to join us today. Welcome to it at 489-1240, 489-1240. Can dial up at 800-825-5865. Can email the show, chris@hailvarsity.com. And as always, like and subscribe on the Hail Varsity YouTube channel. Can go there, watch the show, hear the show that way, and also contribute in the stream. So we will dive into the topic. We joked about divorce yesterday, not that it's a laughing matter, but you've had that moment as a fan where you just put your hands up and said, I am done. Think of Gus in the desert with Walter White. You're firing your team, pretty much. They lose a game. They cause you heartache. You turn and walk the other way, only for a little while. Some of you come back. Some of you find a new team. Some of you just quit. When did you quit on your sports team? Have you? I ask that in reference to the resident Denver Nugget fan, one Elijah Herbel, across the window as his defending NBA champs got annihilated.
Sure didn't act like they're defending NBA champs.
106-80.
Losers.
See, as a Bulls fan, I remember getting real PO'd, real ticked off during the spoiled runs of Chicago. A couple of times, Jordan and the Bulls got down 0-2 in the semis. This is before the Eastern Conference Finals. They got down 0-2 to Cleveland, and they got down 0-2 to the Knicks. Then they reeled off four straight. It worked out okay, and away they went. They had some beneficial calls go their way in a game seven. The only team to take them to seven was the Indiana Pacers, I think, in that 98 season. But long and short, I was. How are you losing to the Chicago? How is Chicago and this Bulls dynasty losing to Cleveland, who you mopped up? They still have Elo on Jordan for some reason. That shot an anniversary today, as is the Allen Iverson, it's only practice rant, post-game moment at the microphone. But Elijah, you're still gonna wear your Denver gear. You haven't quit nor fired the Nuggets. You didn't throw any heating pads at me today when I asked what happened. There's a lot of moments in Nebraska football that I think you can jump in the stream and say, listen, you contemplated it, but it's happened to you as a fan. There's instances as a Cowboys fan, if you're out there, where it's happened. I know there's a ton of Viking fans out there where you're just sick, right? And maybe for the Viking fans out there, it's still that NFC Championship game where they lose to Atlanta at home. The lowly Falcons. If you're a Green Bay fan, lots of instances where you're the favorite going into the playoff, should be favorite. Don't want to even get into that couch session with Bears fans. And from a Nebraska standpoint, there's a lot of moments in Nebraska basketball. Creighton, not so much. You've had a great run. But no, I'm just interested to explore that. How did you consume last night? Did you turn it off? Did you take the dog for a walk? Did you swear at the TV? How did you cope? Or are you a grown-up? That's okay, too. As to you were just able to handle it, and you look back and say, hey, we've got one at least.
Oh, I handled it, but I was angry. Like, I was fine. I definitely...
Isn't it crazy what sports does to you emotionally?
Well, once the lead hit 30, I definitely cracked a beer, and I wasn't planning on cracking a beer last night. Like...
I'm not going to drink during the week.
The problem is
permission,
like...
permission granted.
A lot of the times, whenever you're watching your team get punked like that, you're looking for an excuse. And for a little bit of that game...
It's the mirror.
For a little bit of that game, I could look at the refs and say, man, what are they calling out here? But at the end of the day, you are a professional athlete and you are a defending champion that needs to be able to respond to how a game is being called. That game, how it was being called last night, would have been normal for like 1990s NBA. And I understand you haven't been officiated.
Which I loved.
You haven't been officiated like that all year long. I get that. Does that officiating probably benefit the Timberwolves with their length and their aggression defensively? Yeah, probably. It's still your job as a defending champion to stand up to that and respond. There's a way that defending champions respond. It's a reason why they're champions. The Nuggets did not have a response like that. They turned into a bunch of sixth graders out there, complaining about every single call, throwing things at the refs. Michael Malone tried to get ejected, and they wouldn't even give him that. Like, just the team from top to bottom, from head coach to starting five to bench players, all played like a bunch of sixth graders yesterday whenever the calls weren't going their way.
Way to edit for radio.
Which I'm not blaming the refs for this one. Like, they pretty consistently called it like a 1990s physical basketball game. And I think that's good for the NBA. It's good for the Timberwolves last night. But if you're a defending champion, you need to respond better in that moment. Mm. They got both outplayed and outfought in a playoff game.
It's one thing if you just get annihilated. The team's clearly better. Think of Ohio State 2017 v. Nebraska, okay? Or 2019 Ohio State v. Nebraska, or Michigan last year. It's one thing if you get smoked. It's another thing if you don't respond. It's quite another thing if you just tap out. You don't have any resistance.
Well,
there's no pushback.
And it was the team falling apart, and I don't want to say they didn't continue to play, because they continued to play. They continued to play somewhat hard, but they were mentally not there. They didn't have the mental fortitude that you need in the postseason. It was disappointing to see as a Nuggets fan. It's a seven-game series for a reason. There's still plenty of time for them to come back. And maybe if a game's officiating differently, it goes a little bit differently for them. You saw game one on Saturday night. That was a fantastic basketball game. Night and day compared to the Nuggets' performance. I haven't seen a Nuggets performance like that in years. And it's because of mentally they crumbled whenever they weren't getting the calls that they wanted. It's not how a defending champion responds, and I am disheartened, but I also understand it's a seven-game series for a reason. You talked about the Bulls going down 2-0 a couple times. Don't forget, this is a Timberwolves team that the Nuggets handled pretty easily last season in the postseason. They probably pushed the Nuggets harder than both the Suns and the Lakers last year, and that's why Nuggets fans looked at this series as being a tough one.
Do you think the team looked differently?
I think they probably took this Timberwolves team a little lightly because of what happened last year. They didn't appreciate the growth that Anthony Edwards and Karl Anthony Towns had together this season, the growth of a guy in Naz Reid. I mean, Eric nails it in the stream. That Minnesota team is scary. They're scarier this year than they were last year because of personal growth within individual guys in the team. It's the same team, but it's a different team. Mm-hmm. And the Nuggets didn't respect that in game one. They lost. I don't think they had the wake-up call they needed in game one. It led to that performance we saw in game two. What kind of wake-up call does this give them as you head to Minnesota, a tough road environment with a whole bunch of Minnesota fans that have been dying to have a season like this since Kevin Garnett?
Yeah. No, it's been years they've got their opportunity to get to the conference finals.
It's going to be tough for the Nuggets. I'm not completely out on them just yet. I have not gone... Nebraska post Georgia Southern, where you just give up before the season's over. Like, that was a moment where I think a lot of Husker fans gave up on that season. You just lost to Georgia Southern. This season, it's over. I'm not there with this playoff series just yet. It's over just yet. But man, the Nuggets need to at least go get one of two, if not both, in Minnesota, which is a very, very tall task. But at the end of the day, you have the certified best basketball player in the world. How does he respond? How does whoever fills in for Jamal Murray, assuming he gets suspended, step
in? He didn't even get tossed for it, so can you justify a suspension if he didn't get launched in the game? He should get suspended for the action, but he didn't get ejected in the moment.
Nobody was going to get ejected last night. Unless you punched a ref, you weren't going to get ejected. Well, like Michael Malone was asking
Malone
for
tried.
Ejection. He tried, didn't get ejected. Murray made the money signs right in front of the refs whenever they made a call he didn't like, insinuating that they were paid off. Didn't get ejected for that. And then right before half, he throws the heating pad onto the floor. Doesn't get ejected for that. They weren't going to eject anybody last night, but I have a feeling the league office is going to step in.
Well, we'll see.
Well, and let's be clear. It's better for the NBA if the Timberwolves make it further with that Anthony Edwards hype train. This is not Elijah Herbal conspiracy theory. This is just, let's be honest, Anthony Edwards is better for ratings than the Nuggets are right now. Mm-hmm. So I don't think the NBA would think twice about suspending Jamal Murray in Game 3.
We'll get to your divorce moments in sports. Yeah. When did you quit your team? 489-1240. We'll get to the stream as well.
Thanks for letting me get up on the soapbox there.
No, I saw the highlights last night, saw the heating pad, saw the way it was officiated. Kind of made me smile and brought a tear to my eye. And throwback NBA.
Exactly. Like, that is how a lot of NBA fans want the playoffs to be officiated.
Hmm.
And that style of officiating, it benefits the Timberwolves. It 100% does. But you as a defending champion need to respond and be better in that moment whenever things aren't going your way. The Nuggets didn't. I'm still PO'd, but
it's all right. You have a chance to vent.
Hey, I made it till about halfway through the fourth quarter, and then I flipped it over to Clarkson's Farm on Amazon Prime. I was like, I need something to make me smile before bed.
And your grandpa says, yo, he is first in the stream. Brandon is here. Moronic figures. Says, hey, Elijah, 0-2, have a wonderful day. Justin is here. Tim in at 5. Anonymous checks in. And more Coach McBride questions here. My college friend, the one that got Charlie mad, Anonymous, going back to yesterday's story, had a college friend that was writing for the DN, asked Charlie a question about the Colorado game in 1990. That Colorado game, Nebraska gave up 27 fourth quarter points for the race for number one, and it didn't go well. That season didn't go well for the Big Red. They finished 24th in the country, but guess what? They ended up getting better. Says Charlie got mad. I was sitting in the south end of the Orange Bowl for the 95 Miami game with about 8 minutes left in the second quarter, and you had a third down and put in two tight ends. My friend says we've ran out of this formation three times for no yards so far. I said we're going to run play action to the tight end. Hello, Mark Gilman, touchdown. So he's kind of reliving some setup there. I like it. Jack is in. Tuck is here. And Tuck says we're going to have a wonderful show today. I think he's giving you some encouragement, Elijah. Black Hills Brennan here. KG is here. Also, Jeff checks in along with Chris. He says, bonjour. The other Brian says, what's up, boys? Good to have you in, Brian. Scott is here. And Scott says the Nuggets will win four straight. Tuck mentions the Buffalo Bills. Scott says, I almost dumped Washington when they changed their name. The NFL franchise. Yeah. So there we go.
Well, this is another moment just to say the Washington football team actually is a better name than the Washington Commanders, and I hope they someday go back to that.
Yeah, that'd be all right.
It had such a unique factor to it that when it first came out, I went, oh my God, this franchise is in shambles. And then it really grew on me. I kind of like the Washington football team.
Well, you know, I've never been a Washington fan, but I've respected what Joe Gibbs and company did in my youth. Jeff Snitley in from the Boulder Peace Treaty. I quit the Huskers after every road game I've been to, except the one win in Evanston versus Northwestern, 1-8 on the road. Viewing record for me. By August, I'll be ready to go again. That's it. You've got a lot of Nebraska fans that can circle and point to. I was still a student, so I didn't quit Nebraska during the 0-1 Colorado demolishment. Like, that's the game a lot of Nebraska fans point to, and that's been a billion years ago. But the way it went down, the way you got beat up, it was horrible. But Nebraska showed fight and actually cut that thing to 13 at one point till another fumble happened. But there's been moments in a lot of the games that did in coaches the last 20 years. That was your jumping off point, and then you soul search a little bit, and then you come back because there's hope for it going. It's going to be better with this new coach, this regime, and you're not over that hope, but I think you feel pretty good about what you have in Matt Rhule and what you have with his attention to detail. We'll talk more with Mitch Sherman. He's been a lifelong sports fan. But I think that the 17 season, there's a couple of instances where you were just done going for football, and that was when Ohio State murdered you, and then Iowa came in and seemed to throw every touchdown pass to the kid out of Omaha South, the tight end.
Fant.
Yeah, Fant was wide open, and Captain Kirk made a point of that.
Let's be clear here, and this is also a little bit to make myself feel better. Plenty of Husker fans were ready to jump off last year after that Michigan game for the season. They're ready to jump off for the season, say, hey, call me whenever this team is better, when this team's actually winning games. And then you go undefeated in the month of October.
Well, they respond to Illinois.
They respond, yeah.
Big.
So
short week.
Let's not act like the Nuggets are dead and out of the water. Just because you give up for a night doesn't mean you've given up permanently. Those are two different things.
Short term versus long. Chris says the international incident, the onside kick, is when he tapped out. Mitch Sherman's on the way with Hail Varsity.
It's that time.
Hey, Mitch.
Mitchie, we're looking for you, pal.
Mitch Sherman from The Athletic, talking Big Red.
Unleash the fury, Mitch.
Unleash the fury!
On Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, it's Hail Varsity. We're powered by Cornhead Lager, Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel. Elijah had a little therapy earlier with his Nuggets and what happened in Game 2 last night. We're asking the question, is there a time you've ever quit your team, filed for divorce? I'm done watching. I'm done going. I can't take it anymore. We welcome in Mitch Sherman with The Athletic. And check out Mitch and his Locked On podcast as well. Mitch, you're a longtime Royals fan, brother. You've seen a couple of World Series. There's been some tough seasons. Has there been a time you contemplated walking away from Kansas City?
I've seen three World Series, two championships.
Thank you.
So, yeah,
I forgot.
That's,
okay, yes.
No, that's a couple World Series titles. But
yes.
Don't forget 2014, because that was a good one, too. Yeah, I mean, I haven't walked away in the sense where I've left being a fan or even contemplated stopping my fandom. But there have been many years where you get to, like, May 7th. And I'm just checked out. And it's like, you know, last year being an example where I don't even want to watch if it's on a Tuesday night, because I know that they're already, if not mathematically eliminated, like psychologically eliminated, you know, logically eliminated from postseason contention. And that's not fun as a fan if it's May or June. So in those instances, I've just kind of checked out. But I've never actually given up. I've always known that when February and March come around the next year, I'll jump back on board.
So you must be nice, as the somewhat Rockies fan here chimes in.
Mitch has got fortitude. I like it.
You actually have off-season hope with the Royals. That's a big plus.
I mean, you always have hope, even if there's not good reason to have hope.
Not with the Rockies. Not with the Rockies.
Mitch, let's
go ahead. I probably as a kid did that more, like in the NFL. I was a Dolphins fan growing up, and it just didn't last. It didn't last beyond like the retirement of Dan Marino. And then I think I just lost my, passion for following any NFL team like that. And now I just get to enjoy the games and not have to worry about, living and dying with any team.
Mitch, you and I are on the same wavelength. Once Danny retired, it's not that I don't keep an eye on the fish, but my weekly allegiance stopped with South Florida. So good on you. All right. Longtime Dolphins fan. Finkel is Einhorn. Einhorn is Finkel. So with Nebraska, let's get to some Nebraska football here. Wanted to get your thoughts as we move forward. Joel Klatt out with his preseason top 25. We hit on it yesterday. And I'm interested in your reaction to Nebraska being on his short list as a team. He laid out some facts as to why Nebraska could be top 25. He's saying 7 to 8 wins as he looks at it right now. He's not putting anything in ink, but is way too early top 25. As you do the math on Nebraska here, do you buy that, what Klatt's saying? Do you think you could see Nebraska on some more preseason top 25 lists, or do you think it's too soon?
I think most of them will probably keep Nebraska out and put Nebraska in that category of let's wait and see how things go in the first 2 weeks of the year. It's like a pushing the envelope kind of thing to do, and there's not necessarily like any downside to just taking a flyer on a team that has name value and a freshman quarterback who is intriguing and, you know, kind of taking everybody by storm in Lincoln and around the state of Nebraska. But I don't think that that's going to be a real common thing when, you know, the traditional polls, like the polls that the AP poll, coaches poll, you may see a preseason magazine or something like that put Nebraska at the 20 to 25 range. But I don't think he's off base. I think there's reason to have that kind of optimism, especially if part of your criteria is the schedule. If it's entirely based off of the strength of the team, then I think you need to see more. There needs to be more evidence from Nebraska. But if you're taking into account like how you think the team is going to finish, you might want to give serious consideration to Nebraska just because of how well the schedule sets up in the first half of the season, even beyond the first half, like the first 7 games.
Well, it's an interesting topic of conversation, Mitch, because I think if you put Nebraska in the top 25, if you're one of these national media people and you're right, the victory lap you'll be able to take after 10 years of what we've seen from Nebraska now saying, I think they're a top 25 team. If you're right, you can take one hell of a victory lap. On the other side of things, if you're wrong, you look like a real idiot picking the team that hasn't made a bowl game in almost a decade to be the team that's in the top 25, you know?
You do, but then how many people really, you know, I suppose there's some morons on Twitter who go out and remind the experts in December or November, hey, you had this team number 22 in your preseason poll. But for the most part, it's, you know, it's kind of forgotten. Like, you know, you say that and then it just goes up in smoke in August. Of course, if you're right, then yes, Elijah, you can take a victory lap. But I don't know. It doesn't seem like it's a high-risk proposition to take a team, especially a team like Nebraska, where it's like, well, yeah, I mean, you expect, you know, throw away the last 7 years. You expect that Nebraska is a program that should be able to attain that. And at some point, somewhere, you know, it's going to happen again. Like, they're not just going to fade into complete obscurity. I mean, hey, if Kansas can make it back to where it is now after 40 years or 50 years or 60 years in the wilderness, then certainly Nebraska can and will again too, even if it's not ever in the college football playoff or competing for a conference championship. At some point, it's got to be a top 25 team, right? And so there's not a lot of risk, I think, in Klatt or anybody else going out on a limb in May and saying that. But, you know, there'll be a trendy team to like this offseason, much like it was in Scott Frost's second year in 2019.
Mitch Sherman's with us from The Athletic at Mitch Sherman on Twitter. Mitch, is the Colorado game kind of the launching point, or is it another game, or is it the game early in the season?
Colorado is the game early in the season. I mean, I think the launching point has to be the week before, because when has Nebraska started off a season with a victory? And, I mean,
there's 2016? Does that sound right?
Right. Gosh, is that possible?
Maybe seven, Riley, maybe 17.
Riley's last year start with a win and then go downhill a couple weeks later.
Maybe Scott's did too. And I don't know. It gets blurry, doesn't it?
It does. It seems like all of the last several years, and I know all of these years that have started, of course, with these conference games. You know, Ohio State in the COVID year, Northwestern in Ireland last year at Minnesota. At Illinois on the Thursday night, you know, that's 4 in a row for sure going back to 2020 that have started with defeats. And it just seems like that's been a never ending cycle for Nebraska. So in light of where they're at with the way seasons have started, I think if you're talking about a launching point, it's got to be August 31st against UTEP. Now, I mean, that's a huge upset if UTEP wins that game, and I don't expect in any way that that's going to happen. Nebraska, I believe, is going to be 1-0 when the Buffs come to Lincoln in week two. But you can't overlook it, and you know, as Matt Rhule says, it's a 5-7 team until they play another game. So, when you've had seven consecutive losing seasons, you don't count anything as a win until it happens. And especially if you're going with a true freshman quarterback in his college football debut. But yeah, I mean, Colorado is the early season game of the year. It's the barometer game. It's the one where, you know, I read a comment, maybe it was just from a fan the other day, about how, you know, Colorado's fan base, it puts the Nebraska game in ink, to paraphrase, as a victory. And, you know, Nebraska's like, hey, this is a winnable game. You know, you look at the programs and the trajectories of the programs, and you know, you can make judgments about how you feel Matt Rhule is running his program versus the way Deion Sanders is running his program, and feel good if you're a Nebraska fan. But you know, look at it from the perspective of Colorado. You've played this series in a pair of home and homes over the last several years, and Colorado's 3-0 at this point, trying to go 4-0. So what reason do you really have to believe that the hype is real about Nebraska this time if you're looking in from the outside? That's the perspective of Colorado, and it's probably the perspective of a lot of people nationally. So it's up to Nebraska to dispel that notion and win that game and prove that how Nebraska feels about this team is the reality and not the opposite.
Well, Mitch, let's play the hypothetical game here quickly. Not too bad hypothetically. It's reasonable, but let's say Dylan Raiola does what we expect him to do against UTEP and gets a little bit of juice for the Husker fans. Colorado beats North Dakota State. You fast forward a week, it's a night game at Memorial Stadium. I mean, what type of environment are we talking about for this game? Because that's one thing that Nebraska hasn't quite had against Colorado is that true home field advantage. You could maybe look back to 2018, but even then, wasn't quite the same as what a game following a Dylan Raiola potential big game could be.
He had a lot of juice with Adrian, but you didn't get the game the week before.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That kind of took the air out of the building.
Yeah, 2018, because it was the Frost debut, you know, a week after the cancellation, that really hurt, I think, like the intensity being directed at Colorado. It that became like the celebration the week after there was supposed to be a celebration. Mm-hmm. So it didn't have the same atmosphere that this one would have. And that was also what, the first of these four games when Nebraska was just rekindling things with Colorado, and it had been, you know, almost a decade since they'd played. Now Nebraska's got all this built-up disdain, you know, even more so than, and I think in the eyes of some, than what it was in the latter years of the Big 12, because Colorado's just continued to get over on Nebraska in all of these non-conference games and in ways that have just been so frustrating for Nebraska fans. You know, last year it was the battle of the first-year head coaches. When Nebraska went to Colorado in 2019, it was the year where Nebraska got way ahead at halftime and then blew it and lost in overtime. So I think that if you get to that point, and even if Colorado loses against North Dakota State, which is entirely possible, North Dakota State has a tendency to do that to teams. I don't think it matters so much what Colorado's record is coming into that game, 1-0 or 0-1. As long as Nebraska takes care of business in week one and you've got this true freshman quarterback who is the toast of the town, and you know, Matt Rhule is one win away from a 2-0 start and just to get things going, then yeah, it's gonna be revved up. It's going to be an atmosphere that we probably haven't seen, you know, for a non-conference game. I think you gotta go back to what was the most recent? Was it Miami or Oregon?
It's Miami.
In 2015? Yeah. 14?
14, but it was blood 14. And water, man. It was good.
Yeah. It'd be similar to that. I really do. I really think it would be similar to that because of, you know, the feelings about Miami when Miami came to Lincoln that year. That wouldn't be all that much different from how people would feel about Colorado coming in week two.
Mitch, we'll get caught up again. Thanks for a few minutes today, bud.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. Take care.
Hail Varsity Radio is live. Now, back to Schmitty.
Schmitty's a great guy, but he don't have a brain.
And Elijah.
You want me to speak?
We're not pointing you yet.
On Hail Varsity Radio.
Good stuff from Mitch Sherman. We'll have that up on the podcast, Spotify, iTunes, Google Play with Hail Varsity Radio. Like and subscribe. Give us some feedback and a rating. We'll take that. Good, bad, or ugly. Also find and follow on the Hail Varsity YouTube channel and Hail Varsity Radio Twitter at HVarsity Radio. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbal. We're talking about the time you quit your favorite team.
And my question right now is, I don't think it would happen.
Stream comments we'll get to.
I don't think it would happen, but it would be out there if Nebraska loses to Colorado. Some people would be ready to quit on this team.
They deserve a win over Colorado.
Husker fans?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, I thought you meant the team. And I'm like, well,
Team's got to go earn it. The fans, if you're working on a four-game losing streak to the Buffs, you may or may not see them again.
Well, I worry about the fans a little bit because hating on Colorado has been the popular thing to do this offseason with all the drama that's come out of that program.
It's a kind of a birthright.
Yeah, but that I feel like the annoyance with Colorado has led to people discounting Colorado, similar to what happened last offseason.
It's a hope that, all right, they're really down in the dumps and you drill them. It's more fun to drill them when they're good growing up because there were some really good Buff teams. But it's okay to drill them just for the point of for the sake of hammering.
You'd like to? People forget very quickly that Colorado has more first-round picks on their roster right now than Nebraska's had in the past decade.
Oh, I'm not saying in as much turnstile.
Guys are going to go in the first round next year. I know people are going to turn and say, well, Dylan Riley is a potential first-round pick. Huh? You have two guys in that Colorado roster that, if they don't screw it up for themselves on Twitter, Shador, they're almost locks to be first-round picks next year because of the talent. Mm-hmm. And people say, oh, sure, there's a head case. No GM's going to take him in the first round. He's got arm talent. He's got quarterbacking talent. Travis Hunter is probably the best defensive back in the country next season. And so many Husker fans.
Not if he's got to tackle a 220-pound running back one-on-one.
He's still going to be a first-round pick, and he's still going to be an eventual Pro Bowler. He's that good. I understand his game's not perfect right now. But neither is Nebraska's.
I get it. I'm just saying.
It irks me. We can talk. I think Memorial Stadium is going to be juiced up. I think it's going to be a night game.
Yep.
I think that is big advantage Nebraska. I think Nebraska might have some positive momentum going for the first time in I don't even know when. If you can beat UTEP and Dylan Riley has a good game, there will be some hype around this Husker football team. But let's not overlook what Colorado brings to the table because of the drama they've had this offseason.
We have more on that drama. Dion has spoken about his responses on social media. In a moment, Matt Schick is with us next hour. David Gustafson, Gus, going to talk some Husker baseball next hour. So we left off with instances of fans and listeners quitting your team. KG checks in and says, mark my words, 4 years from now, Bears fans are going to be having this discussion. I think we need to move on from Caleb Williams. No, he needs another season. He's had 3 OCs in 4 years. There you go. You have institution shenanigans going on. Minnesota, there's Viking fan in the stream that says the minute they drafted McCarthy is my jumping off point. I'm trying to find that down here. Oh, it was Hootie079.
We had crew with a Vikings fan call. I don't think we can get to that one, but
we'll need to. Scott was at the last Penn State game in Happy Valley. I think that was also the 17 season, and they were down by 4 at halftime, and he had to ride the bus back to the fairgrounds with Penn State fans. He was not happy. I don't know if he's mentioning in Lincoln or if it was at Penn State. You go wide left. Justin jumps in there. Eric says the double doink for Viking fan. That's there. Also, Scott says, I think Illinois is going to be a tougher game than Colorado. That could be. I think the Buffs probably come in at 0-1. We'll see. But Crew mentioned something about ceiling fans, his weight.
That's why I said I don't think we can go there.
Right. We'll just let the math.
I don't want to get demonetized by YouTube today.
No, that's fair. that's fair. Moon Bot is in. He says, howdy, nerds. Brandon hated the Urban Meyer era in Jacksonville.
Yeah,
that's fair.
He might have won.
Brennan from the Black Hills says, as a Jags fan, when Urban was there.
When you have your head coach kicking your kicker, you have full right to give up.
Yeah. Who hasn't wanted to kick the kicker before? You just can't do it.
Apparently you can. You just get fired.
This is good from Matthew. He was 12 when the baseball strike happened. I think that was the 94. Was it 94 or 95? I don't know. Elijah's like, dude, I wasn't born. But yeah, the baseball strike happened, and he has not been back to baseball since. Apparently, the juiced late 90s didn't bring you back with chicks digging the long ball, Matthew. But yeah, you had Tony Gwynn working on a 400 batting average season. You had Ken Griffey Jr. chasing Roger Maris and Babe Ruth. You had probably it was Maddox or one of the Braves pitchers that were in line for a historic season on the hill. That the year the strike happened, man, there was some fun going on in Major League Baseball. But yeah, it was. There's still a lot of baseball fans that, you know, 30 years later are still irked about it. But kind of a fun topic if it's not your team or 12 hours later.
This is the opposite of a fun topic
for Elijah. For Elijah, but I think the Georgia State game you touched on earlier this hour was a breaking point. And to Mitch's point, there's just still not only nationally a lot of wait and see, but you have local fans that are excited. They like the coach. They like the quarterback. They like the team. There's lots of reasons to buy in. You've just had your heartstrings tugged for a bit too long. And you want to make sure it's real and not a mirage this time. But we'll see. For me, I think of God. There were so many Oklahoma games as a kid, right? That just did you in, and you were just wondering. But the one game that was heartbreaking was that Florida State Orange Bowl, where you missed the kick. But you just felt like the team was different, and they were the following year. They had their confidence.
How about Nebraska-Texas 2010?
That sucked.
After the Big 12 championship game back in Lincoln, game had been juiced for 6 months.
Oh, the red out around the world, the social media, I mean, the hype about it. Oh, and I was covering that game for Fox, so we were able that was Mac Brown was on, like, he wasn't going to get a plane ride home. That's how big that game was for Mac Brown. So you're waiting to do an interview with Mac after the game, and like, he's hugging assistants that have tears in their eyes, and it was just rough. Now the following week, Nebraska had a hell of a win. That was impressive. We'll wind down hour one. It's Hale Varsity, powered by Cornhead Lager.
And now, back to Hale Varsity Radio.
Thanks for spending time. Thanks for your comments in the stream. Hale Varsity YouTube, like and subscribe. Can watch the show that way. You hear us on the Hale Varsity Radio Network. The other Brian checks in. And, you know, that second week of the year is going to be big when my mom's already saying, hey, can you get us some seats? It's like, sure. I said, our friend Brian, as he checks in on the stream, he's already booked Nebraska, Colorado. The amount of Husker PTSD that exists from the fan base is almost unbelievable. Need to take another step towards the season. Two or three more wins. Yeah. And a couple of things as we look at year two and the build, but also the success element of it. I think as a Nebraska fan, you look at a lot of nice things that you got going on right now. Head coach, defensive coordinator, roster back on the lines of scrimmage, phenom at quarterback, really talented other freshman at quarterback, and a five-game winner last year. And you put that into the computer, and you want to spit out a guarantee. But you've had anything but a guarantee the last several years. You feel, though, a little bit safer. Our friend Todd emails in, I want to know why Washington and Cleveland had to change their names, but Kansas City didn't. Can't help you there. Don't know.
What were the two you said, Washington and...
Well, Washington and Cleveland had to change their names, or chose to change their names.
Oh, baseball for Cleveland. I'm like, haven't they always been the Browns? I'm like, what are we...
No.
Oh, okay.
You're thinking, yeah. But okay. But the Chiefs, and I've cleaned up what he calls Kansas City. I have no answer other than management decision.
I would say management decision, and also the insinuation behind the name Chiefs is slightly more respectful than the teams that were in Washington and in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
Those were more slurs, whereas the term chief combined with the Chiefs organization's willingness to work out and help with local tribes,
mm-hmm,
can be combined there. But
good,
yeah,
answer.
Chiefs is not a slur. The team
others,
names from Cleveland and Washington were. They were offensive to people of that culture. So,
thank you.
There we go.
All right. Problem solved. Todd, let us know. Chris at HaleVarsity.com if that satisfies your question. Remember to buckle up. Hands on the wheel, eyes and focus straight ahead. The driver has one job. That's to drive. A message from the NDOT Highway Safety Office. But topic here, the theme today's been about walking away from your sports team and when that moment happened.
And
you've outlined, so many of you have outlined it. Elijah's still sticking strong with his Nuggets. For me, in the Bulls is when the fat man disbanded them all.
No, if
I had no choice.
To me,
just
I'm
quit watching the NBA.
I can be fine with the Nuggets because the Avs play. I still hold on to that hope. If the Avs get destroyed tonight in game one, that's when you might need to check on me. up until that point, I can still hold on to some hope, at least a little bit.
How do you – this is the other question that you're wondering. How do you cope, right? Do you have the old plastic brick or the foam brick you throw? Do you have a – do you have a punching bag in the basement hanging from the unfinished area? Do you take out your frustration after a loss? Some go for walks.
I just need to find something to make me smile.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, something to make me smile is all I need.
Okay.
I used to be the punching bag type of guy. I've grown past that.
You've grown up. David Gustafson, part of Husker Baseball, up next in hour two.
The voice of Husker Nation is on the air. This is Hale Varsity Radio. Insight, opinion, expertise, along with the biggest names talking Nebraska sports. Join in with the show at 402-489-1240 or 1-800-825-5865. Now, here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and Elijah Herbel.
I'm insinuating. Back with you, it's Hour 2 at Hale Varsity. We're powered by Cornhead Lager, Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel. Let's check in. Nebraska baseball against South Dakota State. Indiana looms at Haymarket this weekend. You hear him on the Husker broadcast, David Gustafson, Earl Powell Gus, part of the Hale Varsity radio family. Gus, good to spend some time. Thanks for a few minutes.
You betcha, no problem.
How long and often did you rub said rabbit's foot during the no-no last week?
Well, you kind of started to sense that maybe something special was happening about that fourth inning. And once you got through the fourth, you know, kind of looked at each other and we're like, well, we might witness something. And then you go into silence mode, right? Where you don't talk about anything, you don't touch it because you know something may be happening. But the longer that game went on, well, you just felt more and more comfortable that it was possible. You know, we knew once he got out of the situation where there was an error and then a walk, that's where you kind of see sometimes the guys will drift the other way, and then all of a sudden the wheels come off. But he got focused right after the double play, went back at it, and he had this great command. I mean, he faced 29 total batters. I mean,
That's incredible. And it was really fun to watch, and it was fun to be up in the booth with that kind of performance on the field.
And I tell you what, for me, it was that seventh inning, goes and strikes out the side. That's whenever it like dawned on me. That's also when I was kind of first checking in with the game. I talked last week. We had a meeting following our show. And that's when I first checked in on the game, is like end of the sixth, and I see he strikes outside in the seventh. I go, oh, he's actually going to do it. This isn't like Elijah cursing it by now going and checking and seeing what's happening. Like, he just struck out the side. He's actually going to do it.
Well, and it was impressive the way he just never lost the command. I mean, 12 strikeouts is impressive enough, but to give up also no hits and, again, just allow a few base runners, it's crazy control what he had. And it was pinpoint control from inning one. And, boy, he just mowed through the order the first time. And you just thought, well, we might be witnessing something. And sure we were, because what impressed me most really was he only had worked 5 1/3 innings combined prior this season, and it was impressive for him. We were mentioning, okay, well, he's past his where he's been an entire year, and he still got all his command and still has good velo. And it was impressive to watch, because the stamina to go out there and to throw what he did, 107 pitches and that many strikes, that many strikeouts, it was just simply impressive.
Was that the first no-hitter you've seen in person?
It is the first 9-inning no-hitter I've seen in person. I saw one that was a 7-inning no-hitter because of the run rule in a conference tournament one time. And then I also saw a kid that went and threw 9 1/3 innings of no-hit baseball, but he ended up walking a guy. They moved him around, and he actually took the loss. So that's a hard way to come out of there as well. So I've seen a few, but that was the first 9-inning one, and it was impressive.
See, I had seen a 4-inning run rule no-hitter in Legion Baseball. I think it was JV, which doesn't really count. Pretty mismatched teams. Nearly made it through 4 innings.
It counts in the Schmidt household.
I forgot that Carson did that.
Bite your ever-living tongue. Gus, how did the parents react? He used to coach youth baseball, letting a little tyke out there for 9+.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if they would allow that happen.
I'm kidding. I'm insinuating. He just kept him out there to keep the no-no going.
Right. You got to keep it intact. He's got it going right now. Just throw him out there.
Son, I know you pitched 100 pitches 2 days ago, but you got a no-hitter going through 3. You better keep working.
Just ice it later.
Right. You got 20 more in you. Come on. Dig down.
You see that foul pole?
Right.
Take a jog, but let's expand a little bit here on Jackson Brockett, of course, National Pitcher of the Week. I think Baseball America giving him those honors, and you know, let's just jinx it now. How about back to back? First of all, that'd be really awesome. Second of all, is Jackson an arm that Nebraska can lean on moving forward? We've talked a lot about midweek. We know that Nebraska's been really good in weekend series, 2 out of 3. But, you know, for bigger and better beyond, when we talk postseason, is Brockett somebody you think that's worked his way into that conversation?
Well, I think certainly he just opened the door for that conversation to have happen, because with his performance, what he did, and you know, there's still some uncertainty in the weekend rotation. You know, Sears has Friday night lockdown. They have McConaughey for Saturday, but there is, you know, Walsh ran into some trouble. They've used Christo from time to time on Sundays as well. So there's some room there. But also, and I've said this many times, if you're going to make a true run, a deep one, into the conference tournament or regionals, you really do almost need a fourth true starter, because it's tough. Especially to get into a loser bracket, have to come back out of that. It's tough if you don't have a true fourth starter. So there's certainly ways that he can work his way into the rotation, if it's not the weekend, certainly when they're going to need the postseason.
Do you think Nebraska is still in play to host a regional? As you look at the RPI, they're 21st in the country, a very impressive RPI, and that's kind of the rationale you have. Maybe they can still host. Do you think that it still could be in the cards for them?
I think if they could win the last two series and maybe sweep one of them and do some damage in the conference tournament, absolutely, there's a chance, because you look at some of the regionals, and it's, you know, like Oklahoma, I was looking at, they have maybe they're the 16th spot right now in some of the projections, but you know, they're not much RPI difference, record RPI, or either the record or the RPI is not much different than Nebraska. So there's still some
work that could be done that could get them there, certainly. But it's going to have to be done. They're going to have to be very successful here the next 2 weeks.
Well, how big of a difference in your mind is that home field advantage at Haymarket Park if Nebraska does get to host a regional?
Well, it's a big difference because you have all those Husker fans there, right? The environment's different. It's electric. You know, for the home team, usually it is very electric, and it's tough to go into somebody else's place and win. And especially with all those fans are that loud, Haymarket would be a great place to host that regional. So I think it's a big advantage if they can get it. Could they go win another regional on the road? Absolutely. But it would be a huge advantage if they could play at home.
David Gustafson's with us, part of the Husker broadcast team, Hail Varsity Radio. You'll hear Gus on AM 590 and, of course, News Talk 900 Columbus. Gus, what do you like about this squad right now? If you were to circle one or two things as you've had a chance to see them as we get closer and deeper into May, what do you like with their momentum, and as far as what do you think travels to tournament time?
Well, I just like their mindset, because they don't get too rattled when they drop a game here or there, or even a couple of weeks ago when they were kind of sliding up just a hair, you know, lost 5 out of 7. They still weren't rattled, and they were just going about their work, and they were trying to, you know, we'll go face another day. So I think their toughness and their mental toughness is huge for this team, because they are very resilient. They'll come back, and you know, get to lose a game. Well, good thing is most times you get to play tomorrow in baseball, and that's kind of their mentality. And they really do have that same fight throughout the entire 9 innings, because we've seen them several times down 7th, 8th inning, and they'll make a rally and come back. Or even I look back at the Iowa series where they got punched to the mouth right away and gave up 3 runs early in that game on that Friday night, but they found a way to come back and win. So even if they get down within the game itself, they usually have a lot of fight in them, and you never see them give up, and they're always going to give themselves a chance to win it at the end.
What's more important, do you think, for this team in a potential postseason run? Is it the batters performing better than they have in the regular season, or is it the pitchers? Like, which side of that argument do you think needs to be playing their best baseball by the time regionals and, I guess, even conference tournament time rolls around?
Well, if you have dominant pitching, you can usually do good things in postseason. So if they can get that done, I think pitching maybe slightly more important in that situation, because if you have great starting pitching, it can get you deep in the tournament play, and you don't have to use as much out of the bullpen. And you probably are ahead on the scoreboard if your starter's right deep into the game. So all those things go together. But I'd say the pitching may be a little bit more important to get off to certainly good starts, get 6 innings, quality starts out of your starters. That's a huge thing. And then to have a steady bullpen, too, a rock-solid bullpen, it can go a long ways.
When we talk bullpen here, David Gustafson's with us here on Hail Varsity Radio. KP's had 20 appearances. Worthley's come in and kind of claimed that fireman spot, which is good. Have you seen that area of the team, the bullpen, get better through your time? It's not always perfect, I get, but are they more of a certainty, or is it still a question mark?
No, I think there's more. I mean, you've seen some guys that have kind of picked up and grabbed roles. Mm-hmm. And there's also some guys that are emerging that are being used a little more as well. And so that's good to see. A guy like Grant Clevenger, I mean, we didn't see him earlier in the year, but now he's come in a couple different times in certain situations versus lefties and been very successful. So there's some – they're not true defined roles that this guy's the 8th inning, this guy's the 9th inning, because they all have the capability – close out or go into long relief. Hill Clark's been really, really good out of the pen here of late, and he was this weekend as well. So there's not necessarily defined roles there, but they're improved, that's for sure. And they kind of have a little bit better idea of where they want to use those guys each and every weekend.
As the year has gone on, what influence have you seen from Rob Childress over this pitching staff?
Well, I mean, it's the influence of how much knowledge can one person have, right? I mean, he's just a tremendous pitching coach. And so he installs confidence in those guys. That's the biggest thing. Go out there, do your job, because you may only be asked to throw to one guy. The lefty versus lefty in the match, we've got to get this guy out. Well, that's your job. Go do it. And they've responded well to him.
And he just gives them a lot of confidence as they go out there in the hill, because if he didn't have confidence in them, they wouldn't be out there throwing. So I think that it's installed in those guys, and he just does a great job, period. Rob's just such a good pitching coach, knows the game so well, and can help those guys develop.
Gus, we'll get you out of here, but spend a moment on Ben Columbus and Stoney and, of course, Dylan Carey. Nebraska's offense has seemed to pick it up. They've not always been great with runners in scoring position, but then they can turn it around and flip it off of maybe a bad outing and get hot when they need to. Speak a moment to the offense and what you've liked about their approach at the plate.
Well, this offense, I mean, can be very potent at times, and it's 1 through 9 because they are a little bit – they can move them around a little bit and still get the results that they want. But, you know, they're very – to me, it starts with a guy like Josh Caron is just so consistent all the time. You know, he's going to put up good power numbers, which he has, and he's consistently putting the ball in play. And then it goes around from there. You have Josh Overbeek, who's now hitting leadoff because Brumbaugh's out. They hope to get him back here very soon, which would be good. That would help the lineup as well. But it's a very deep lineup. There's a lot of power in it at times. And if they can get guys on, good things usually happen. So for me, it's always, can you get that first guy out of the inning? Because then usually you have a very good chance to score because somebody's going to bunt them over, or was it extra base hit to begin with, you got a pretty good chance to score. So if you can get that leadoff guy on, that's when the good things have happened for this team. Yes, they've had to rely on a lot of two-out hitting of late, which is just clutch. And so those guys are coming up and really performing well.
It's David Gustafson with us here on Hail Varsity Radio. And last thought here, what are you watching for against South Dakota State? And then this weekend, Indiana, it's Senior Day on Saturday, a big weekend for Nebraska against an Indiana team that also finds themselves top 64 in RPI as it stands right now. What are you watching for both tomorrow and this weekend?
Well, just to see if Rocket can be consistent again. And if he does, they'll do well. And we'll see some guys that maybe not. We didn't see any last week out of the bullpen, but typically you'd see some guys out of the bullpen in a midweek game, but we'll see how they do. And after that, offense can kind of bounce back. They didn't have the greatest day on Sunday, so you'd like to have see them put up some runs in that game. Then this weekend, huge series, right? It's Indiana. Everybody's a game behind Illinois for first place right now. So this is a big, big weekend series. And if you want a shot at hosting, this would be a good series to win for sure. And sweep would be great to help you out in that situation.
David Gustafson, Gus, will be listening. Thanks for the time, bud.
All right, thanks, guys.
Good to spend time with David Gustafson, longtime partner on Hail Varsity a few years back. And excited to hear him and Ben tomorrow night. So the topic this day has been, you know, moments where you've quit your team. Poor Elijah, and I'm going to call to that watering hole down the street by your home, and I'm just going to put a tab out for you. If your abs go...
I thought you were going to say you're going to put a private eye detective in there.
No. No, I'll just start a tab for you. And best case scenario, we just use it Friday.
Worst case scenario, you're broke and I'm not at work tomorrow.
But, yeah, that moment you've thought about or have quit your team after a just awful, awful, gut-wrenching, debilitating loss. Wayne checks in the stream and says, if Husker fans want to quit, then better seats for me. He says, Husker fan for life, Moonbot says he threw a TV out the window after the Nebraska-Northwestern-Ireland loss. I'm not going to ask for proof. I believe you, Moonbot.
I do want to know how many deep you were.
Well, the thing is...
That being said, halftime of the Broncos' Super Bowl loss to the Seahawks, I wanted to throw a TV.
That thing was
I get it.
Done, though.
And, yeah, and I wasn't even of age to drink. I was drop-dead sober, and I wanted to toss a TV out the window. So
that's almost worse.
The Broncos have done 3 touchdowns by the time food's ready. I'm like, no.
Look, a strip sack again. Go Big Redcast, our friends on the Herd Ad Network, being a longtime fan of Nebraska basketball, Husker football as of late, the Rockies, the Nuggets, and the Hartford Whalers, RIP. We can't be hurt anymore by sports teams. We just hope. Matt Schick's on the way.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back to you. It's Hail Varsity. We're powered by Cornhead Lager. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbal. We welcome in Matt Schick from Schick and Nick. Of course, you hear him on Sirius XM. You watch him on ESPN, ESPNU at ESPN underscore Schick is where you can find him. May or may not be wearing a Storm That Puppy t-shirt. True or false, Schick?
Not wearing it currently. Not currently wearing a shirt. No, that's a different story. I need to get a hold of one of those. You know, Kent Pavelka has. I think he bought all of them, so we're sold out at the moment. So I need to find a way to get a Storm That Puppy shirt. You know, he's a very proprietary guy. You know, that's his saying, his slogan, and so he's going to profit off of it.
Well, I mean, there were multiple mentions during Nebraska's historic season. With Jake and Kent and the Schick and Nick show, while you know that decade drought was being quenched, you got to smile about that.
Yeah, there's no question about it. I feel good for all parties involved. I feel good for Kent. Kent needs something to be happy about and to smile about. And let me tell you, what would be better? Then you weigh the two things, drop-off championship or an NCAA tournament win. I think we all know the answer to the shirt.
Well, and I haven't checked in with him in a while, so I don't know if he's marking up the price or it's just a shrine in his room, but it's pretty good. Another question I have for you, have you thrown any heating pads today?
Oh.
No, I haven't. That's quite a thing. You know, as Tim Legler said this morning, you know, Jamal Murray didn't shoot the ball very well, so it's very not shocking at all. He missed the referee with his shot there.
Wow.
But, yeah, I haven't thrown any heating pads. That's something that, I mean, Jamal Murray, I think his punishment should be, no, you don't have to. You will get suspended, but not only that, your next game, you will be watching from the nosebleeds, and you can actually sit with people who do that type of stuff.
That's true. Now, we're going to lay our cards on the table. Elijah.
I don't want to speak on this.
Well, no, you're a proud partner of the show, and you've been a Denver fan as long as live. So he's had a little issue today. And we've all had that moment, Chick, where you've wanted to file divorce on your sports team. And last night may have been yours, Elijah. 0-1 Colorado may have been mine, technically, because I was still a student covering Nebraska or, you know, attending / interning or whatever. And then do you have a Bills moment or do you have a Bills top five?
Well, number one is the Music City Miracle.
Yeah.
That was just a punch in the gut. You go from Mr. Steve Christie killing a field goal and Wade Phillips going nuts and celebrating to one of the great Travis Shamm mockeries in the history of officiating, which we won't get into. I mean, you know, I'll get into it for 8 seconds. I mean, you watch the replay of that, and the side judge is appearing into the frame just as the pass is being caught. He was in no position to make that call. But I digress. That's one. There was another where the Bills were playing the Patriots, and the game was essentially over. The Patriots throw up a ball into the end zone from midfield. They call pass interference on the Bills and put the ball at the 1 yard line. They wind up winning the game. So that was one. Flutie was the quarterback there. I think it was against Bledsoe. So that's how far back that thing goes. You know, the Super Bowls were what they were, not terribly. I mean, they were disappointing, but, you know, at least you never had to wonder. I wonder what would have happened if we made the Super Bowl that year, because we knew. But those would be my couple. You know, Elijah, back to the Denver thing. I mean, it's so funny how we're having this conversation about, okay, I'm fed up with this team. You know, Jamal Murray throwing the thing. We can't beat Minnesota. He just won the world championship last year. It's like, I was hosting ESPN Radio last weekend. People are talking about the wringing their hands about Giannis and not staying healthy and what do they do with him. I'm like, you won a championship a few years ago. It's fine. Doesn't the statute of limitations hold up a little bit where we're not going to gripe for a few years about winning it all? My goodness.
Well, the problem is, Schick, and maybe this comes from a place of, I don't know, overconfidence, but whenever your team wins a championship, you think that they are going to respond like champions from that point forward. And the Nuggets did not. Yeah, okay, the officiating was circa 1987 last night. No blood, no foul. The Nuggets just absolutely folded under those circumstances. They got outfought by the Timberwolves. The Timberwolves were hungrier, and as soon as things started going against the Nuggets, they packed it up. And that's my big problem with it, is how are you going to respond like that the year after you were world champions? It's embarrassing.
Well, the Timberwolves were hungry for Nuggets, and they were there. So what else can you say?
That was pretty funny during the halftime show yesterday. I haven't seen the Nuggets get demolished like this since Charles Barkley's last time at McDonald's.
Yeah. That's all right.
Pretty good.
Matt Schick's with us. Few minutes at Hail Varsity Radio at ESPN_Schick. So, Schick, need to get your thoughts on, you know, Nebraska football, the hype trains are moving on down the track in some corners. Your compadre from CU, Joel Klatt, has the Big Red in his early top 25, but lots of anticipation already, and then that may have been verified to many during the spring game, albeit just a spring game. What did you think of Raiola, and what did you think of Nebraska?
Nebraska looked great against Nebraska. It's always so hard, right? It's just so hard to put all your chips in the middle, but you can't deny that Raiola, the ball comes out of his arm a little bit different than you're accustomed to there at Nebraska. They've had some good quarterbacks in the past. I'm not sure they had a guy with an arm like this, so that matters. And I think there's just something about buying into the hope, knowing that with, you know, barring some sort of unforeseen transfer or injury, you've got a bona fide quarterback in there for a few years, and you got a coach that's not going anywhere, and you've got players that aren't going anywhere. I mean, no one's hopping into the portal after a 5-win season. If they are, it's because, you know, they either disgruntled or want a better opportunity or whatever, but you're not seeing this mass exodus. You're seeing guys flock there. You're seeing recruits still want to check out Nebraska and high-level prospects despite a 5-win season. Those kind of things matter. So long-term, I'm buying in. In terms of 12-month short-term, there's no doubt the schedule builds itself for at least 6 wins. I think you're at the point now where anything short of 6 is very disappointing, considering you put it together with duct tape last year and were able to be on the verge of bowl eligibility. So the number one score games that they had in overtime and a top 25 defense and a majority of guys coming back, they're going to be one of the more experienced teams outside of the quarterback position. To me, that leans itself to being justifiably optimistic. And I would say those who are saying 9-10 wins are a little out over their skis, but I think 7-8 wins is very realistic and perhaps be the expectation.
Matt, when you talk about justifiable off-season hype, hope, if you will, it feels like we're going on 10, 15, 20, maybe an infinite amount of off-seasons where Nebraska seeming justifiable off-season hype. There's a reason Nebraska is called the off-season national champion year after year. What to you feels different about this time around than, say, the past 9?
Well, I think you have, for the first time in more than 10 years, I think you have a head coach who's a mature adult. So I think that's helpful. I think you have hope that isn't tied as much. It's tied to a coach, but it's also tied, tangible hope tied to the most important position in all of sports, and that's the goal, and that's the quarterback. That matters. So I think those two things are kind of in lockstep now, where you've got a proven head coach and a guy who's being regarded as a potential NFL-caliber quarterback. When's the last time that you had that at Nebraska? So, again, I think you can have righteous optimism, but at the same time, it needs to be cautious simply because of where you've been before. But I think it's a good time to be a Nebraska fan amidst this changing landscape going on in college football, that there seems to be someone steadying the ship there at Nebraska, and I think that matters.
Is it a good time to be a Buff fan?
Is it a good time? I would define good. I hate to go all Bill Clinton on you, but depends on what your definition of good is. It's a good time if you want attention. It's not a good time, I don't think, if you want stable consistency. It's really hard for me to see this program being anything more than a 4-5-6 win season, a 6-win team. I just don't, you know, it's kind of the antithesis of Rule right now, where you know Rule's in it for the long haul. I don't know if anyone can justifiably say that about Deion. And that, to me, as a Colorado grad, is troubling. But it's kind of enjoy it while you can. Hopefully Shador is as good as he thinks he is, and as good as his dad thinks he is, and as good as some of what he showed last year. But I just don't know how you have revolving doors of player personnel and hope to have anything resembling a very successful year.
From a short-term standpoint, is this – what do you believe? Do you think Deion will eye an NFL opening? Do you think Colorado could be done with him after 2 years? And I'm sorry to go this direction this soon, but, I mean, there is a worst-case scenario out there with all the youth they're relying on.
There's definitely a worst-case scenario out there, but I think, you know, I try to look at it through a lens of, you know, after last season, Deion was worth his contract simply because of the attention that he brought. That being said, this year is very important for them to show something on the field that resembles a consistent product that you can build from, because, you know, your windows of opportunity go by very, very quickly. And for Colorado, it might have lasted a month last year, that first month of the season. They get all that attention. And then what? And then this whole offseason with kind of disparaging former players and stories written about you. You know, there just needs to be a maturity at the head coach position of, I don't have time for the noise of these stories. I need to work on my program and hunker down and get going here. You know, I don't know that he's necessarily going to follow Shador or anyone to the NFL. But if he wants another head coaching job and use it as a springboard to a better college head coaching job, you'd better show this year that you can build on what you started and finish what you began, and I hope he can do that.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Matt Schick's with us a few minutes. It's Hail Varsity Radio at ESPN_Schick.
Matt, Nebraska fans, and I think Colorado fans too, already have that game in September circled, Nebraska-Colorado at Memorial Stadium. What does that game mean to you? Do you think that could be a game that in part determines how new head coaches decide to try to build their rosters in the future of college football as everything kind of changes with the portal? It's the Wild West right now. Do you think that's a game that can influence how other teams try to rebuild?
I think it's a game that can teach you a lot of lessons about how quickly things can change on you. Because let's be honest, I mean, you know, Matt Rule tried to plug and play a quarterback last year and a couple of other positions, and it didn't necessarily work out. But I think what the tried and true way to build outside of the, you know, these programs that can do it no matter what kind of way, you still have to build it through high school recruiting and retaining your talent. And so is that game going to teach us anything? It might just teach us that, you know, Nebraska is ready for prime time, pun intended. But at the same time, will it teach you anything about how good either team is if Colorado isn't as good? I just think that game turns into, it's all about revenge. It's all about, you know, getting back at Nebraska, getting back at Colorado for what happened last year, and trying to do the, you know, the whole return to dominance, restore the order type of thing. And I think Nebraska is certainly primed to do that. But I cannot wait for the quarterback matchup of Raiola and Shador, assuming that Matt Rule names Raiola the quarterback, the starting quarterback, before that game.
Schick, are you coming back? We think it's going to be a night game.
Oh, that's an interesting proposition. You know what's funny? I think my wife and 10-year-old son are going to that game because it's the annual rite of passage where when you turn 10, my father-in-law takes you to a Husker game, and my wife gets to piggyback and take a free trip back home. So I think they picked the Colorado game, I believe, to go to, which I'm insanely jealous about. I might sneak into the stowaway luggage there and try and get there. But here's the thing, like, could I even go there and wear Colorado gear? Like, I would have to be so neutral because I don't want to get beat up, but I also don't want to be on the losing end, right? So I got to play it so I can't lose in that. So I got to figure out what my garb, what my dress would look like. But I would love to be there. That game's going to be electric.
Well, here's what you do, Schick. You wear your Colorado gear to the press box and cheer the entire game.
Yeah, done.
I'm sure everyone would love that.
Yeah, I'm sure that'll get me some free Valentinos with my press pass. yeah, I'm sure the chef will look up at me with squinty eyes and say, "Hey, why don't you try this piece over here? This is especially for you."
All the red pepper flakes you want. no, I had to wear a Buffs hat in the '94 game because I sat in the Buffs section with my cousin who went to Colorado. That's the only way I could get into the 200th sellout. It was my family members, some of them went to Colorado, never graduated, but anywho, they were wearing the old Fred Flintstone buffalo hat, right? With the horns and the fur and yeah.
Well, I think I told you.
I torched the hat afterwards.
I've told you this before, Schmitty. My cousin currently finishing up her freshman year at CU, and she's trying to make it out to Lincoln for the game. I'm like, get yourself one of the guest passes in the student section from my little sister. Wear your Buff gear. It's going to be great. I promise nothing will be said your way while you're in the student section wearing all your Buff gear. So I'm hoping that happens.
Yeah, keep hoping.
No, just make sure you get your upgrade your liability to comprehensive insurance on your car before you go out there. That way you're totally covered and you can cheer as loud as you want and honk your horn as loud as you want driving in.
Hold on a minute. So the old detailing and remodeling of vehicles, I don't know that that's happened to Buff fans in Lincoln. I know it's happened a lot in Boulder, Schick.
Well, here's the problem. You want to know why? It's because there are so many more Nebraska fans that go out to Boulder that it's bound to happen. Colorado's not traveling as well. So, you know, 1,000 vehicles versus 20. Yeah, play the numbers. I mean, of course it's going to happen out there. You know, it's a Russian roulette.
It's a numbers game. Matt Schick's with us. ESPN _ Schick. Sirius XM satellite. And, of course, ESPN, ESPNU. Last thought, Schick, we'll get you out. Husker baseball. Yep. And I know you do a great job of covering college baseball. But your assessment of the Big Ten, I know most projections have Nebraska in as a 2-seed. The latest I saw was Charlottesville. But what's your, let's say Nebraska doesn't win either the regular season or doesn't win the Big Ten tournament. I think they're okay, but where are they coming out of the Big Ten in your eyes?
Well, I think they're okay simply because their metrics tell you that they're okay. And this is one of the good things about not watching all of the games if you're on the committee. I mean, we always have this conversation. I'll be anchoring the selection show that Monday on Memorial Day, and I'm sure I'll get a bunch of texts from people in Nebraska going, "Are they in? Are they in?" And I'll have to play coy, even though I know the answer already. But I think it's, you know, the metrics might belie what's actually happening on the field, but you can't ignore the numbers. Mm-hmm. And the fact is they might not be a top 25 team, but metrically they are, and I think that matters. So I think if you're a Nebraska baseball fan, you're feeling pretty good. But at the same time, you still need to finish strong. You know, you don't want to have an early exit of the Big Ten tournament. You know, those kind of things that leave it into the committee's hands. But they've had such a strong season that you'd be hard-pressed to believe. I mean, I wouldn't put it out of the realm of possibility that they're in you know, perhaps regional host mode. But they would have to have a lot of special things happen down the stretch in order for that to happen.
All right. Well, we'll see how it shakes out for Nebraska. Schick, appreciate the time. It's always fun to talk. Thanks for a few minutes today.
Always good. Hang on, sorry about your Nuggets, Elijah. You just have to, sorry about that world championship that only happened 10 months ago, buddy.
Yeah, I have to always sit back and just say, growing up as a Nuggets fan, I never, ever thought I'd see the day. So no matter what happens this year, it'll be frustrating short-term, but long-term, at least the Nuggets got one.
Yeah, I mean, I remember living in Denver, and it was, hey, are we going to the Bulls game tonight? You know, it was never about going to the Nuggets game. You waited till Jordan was in town, and you're going to see the Bulls game. Now they're actually, I mean, it's amazing what has happened there. And move over, Dennis. I mean, this is good.
Hey, and on the bright side, it's still an Avs town, and the Avs play tonight. So go Avs.
There you go.
Schick, be good, buddy. Thank you.
Bye, buddy. See you guys.
Good to hear from Matt Schick. Spend time with him. Both segments on the podcast, Spotify, iTunes, Google Play. Can also catch it and rewind it on YouTube, Hail Varsity YouTube, and rewatch Hail Varsity Radio Twitter at HVarsity Radio. So there are two sports names trending right now on Twitter. One is Wade Boggs. We have talked about the 999 challenge. Nine beers, nine dogs, nine innings.
Could be a good weekend for it, by the way.
Might be a great weekend for it if I'm not golfing. Other is the Wade Boggs challenge. I got it wrong. I thought he drank like 32 beers, 33 beers cross country. Well, the urban legend is at 107 beers cross country. That's a jump.
If the Avs lose tonight, I might take down 107.
Here's the other thing. Is it the over-under on how many beers Ric Flair had before he lipped off? Ric Flair trending on social media, woo.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Final time, it's Hail Varsity. We're powered by Cornhead Lager. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel. Vic chimes in. Vic in Denver. Not sure you could even bong 107 beers on a cross-country flight with somebody pouring them in a funnel for you. Brian says, fact. Vic says he's tried. That's more than 10 gallons of beer. Why are we bringing math into this, Vic?
Well, yeah, it's pretty simple math, though.
It's got to be, that's like 3.21 beers per hour, says Moonbot. I don't know.
I think he's saying that's 21 beers per hour.
Yeah, I think that's better math.
That's aggressive. You do a beer every three but minutes?
I just saw it. It's got to be true, right? It's got to be true on social media. 107. Cross country.
Thank you, Brennan, for censoring himself so he can put himself on the screen here.
I bonged 26 beers in one night and nearly bleeped the bed.
It's a hell of a performance, though. 26.
Nearly? Oh, wow. That's good. So 107, that's like Andre the Giant territory, isn't it?
It's an urban legend, and I think we have all commonly just come to understand that there's no chance it actually happened. He may have taken down a lot.
Can we get Wade Boggs on?
We can try. Do you have his number?
I don't.
Neither do I.
But might be able to figure out a way to do it.
You can try.
Got a guy that might have his number.
But, I mean, at this point in his life, there's any rationale for him to say, nah, it never happened.
Hall of Famer, multiple-time batting champ, got to ride a horse, sold your Hall of Fame lid to Tampa, and you're a native of Omaha.
We can see, I guess.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's topic of conversation that he wants to dive right into.
I mean, it's among my generation what he's known best for.
Is the beer
story. And I think there's a...
See, my generation, dude, was incredible. And Tony Gwynn.
I think there needs to be a shout-out to It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia for bringing back that urban legend into my generation.
But what was their stance? Was it over 100? Was it 30?
That's a great question. I
never really got into the show.
Have you ever seen it where they all wear the white T-shirts?
Chris says, with the aid of Peruvian marching powder, anything's possible.
Yeah. I'm not going to speak on that one. I enjoy having a job.
That's funny. Oh, well. Get the podcast. Spotify, iTunes, Google Play. It's where you can download it.
Oh yeah, it's 107 in the always. It's Always Sunny Philadelphia.
Okay, so I was selling him short. So was this Boston to Anaheim? Was this Boston to Seattle? Were there stops? I mean, think about it. I mean, if we're just a direct flight, it's 5 hours.
You know, the BS stories always tend to have a little bit less corroborating information than just these questions that you're asking.
We'll be back tomorrow at 4. Thanks for tuning in to Hail Varsity.
A Huda Media Production.